team casting call, you have to say who you would cast to play that person in their biopic. I'm gonna cast for Matthew Mark Ruffalo.
Oh,
Oh,
nice.
okay.
The resemblance is there. Natalie, I'm giving you Emma Stone, okay?
Oh, I
Oh,
love
wow.
that. Okay. For Lance. Okay, so it's gotta be sort of
So we're
like
looking for someone suave, handsome,
right, so yeah, suave,
intelligent, a leader
smart,
among
a
his fellow
little sort
man.
of sarcastic.
What?
This is gonna be a surprise, but there's definitely a reason behind it.
You're gonna give me
I'm gonna go
Frankenstein's
for
monster,
Lance
right?
Owen Wilson. He's got like such a positive demeanor, and I think that really translates with Lance.
All right, I'll take the compliment. Thank
Yeah,
you.
I love that.
This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not so good, and the continuous opportunity for high-quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state.
And here are those three informed instructors now.
Hey guys, welcome back to All Things Education. I'm Natalie Arias, a campus leader based in San Antonio, Texas, here with
My name is Lance Barish. I am a high school math teacher up in Dallas-Fort Worth.
Hey y'all, Matthew Balter here from Austin, Texas. I teach creative writing and speech and debate.
What's up, guys? Top of the morning to
Top of the morning to you, Natalie.
I don't know how y'all feel, but to me, it seems like we rang in the new year about 10 minutes ago, and so much has already happened, just like in the world. How's 2025 starting off for each of you?
2025 has been exciting. It is nascent, but with a lot of promise and a lot of interesting things on the horizon. We did just have a snow day here in DFW this week, which has been like almost like those first 10 days of the year didn't happen yet, and this is a rosy start. So yeah, I'm excited for 2025. What about you, Matthew?
Yeah, same. I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to a new year. I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a lot of interesting things happening right now in the world and in our country and in our state of Texas. And yeah, I mean, I think that when it's interesting and weird, it can be exciting too. And so we'll see what happens, but I definitely seem to have a pretty positive attitude these past 2 weeks or so.
Nice. Love to hear that. Well, we've been hinting at the start of the 89th Texas legislative session, and guess what? It is upon us. In fact, by the time we air this episode, the Texas Ledge will have already been buzzing and in full swing. The official opening day is January 14th, 2025, and the state capitol will certainly be abuzz with activity for the next several months. For the past several months, legislators have been busy drafting bills, and I just did a quick search of the Texas legislature online. We're going to link that in the show notes and talk about it again later. But before I go on to say what I found, take a guess. I want y'all to guess as to how many bills have been introduced that address public school policy, just that
Oh.
include the words public school. How many bills do you think have been?
I mean, I know a few of the big ones that are being proposed, but I haven't looked at like the total number. It's really early, so there's probably a lot of them out there, and then many of them will not make it very far. So I'm gonna round up. I'd say maybe, let's say 15.
Okay.
I was going to go way over that.
Okay,
15. I was going to
yeah.
say like 115. So that's where I'm putting myself
Hmm.
on record here.
Okay, well, if you go to the Texas Ledge online at the link in our show notes and you hit the search tab, you can search by text. And if you type in public school, you get 372 matches.
Okay, I was closer then. I win.
You were definitely
significantly closer than me.
You would have won at Price is Right, Lance, for
sure.
There
you go.
So anyway, they won't, like you said, Matthew, they won't all make it to or even through a committee review, let alone become law. And many of them are related to the major topics that we have discussed here, like school funding, teacher pay, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And while, you know, we're sure to continue our coverage of those priority items as they develop, I came across a few bills when I was scanning through that are a little more obscure. And I thought that it would be cool to run them by y'all to get your take on what they would look like in practice, whether or not they're really truly reasonable and even valuable, you know, use of time in this legislative session to devote any attention or energy to.
Yeah, let's hear these obscure bills.
Love it. Hopefully this will give some reading material for our listeners as well.
Because we'll link each of the bills in their full text for your direct review as well. I'm just going to read a little excerpt from each and then get your thoughts. So we have Senate Bill 52, which has been introduced. And from that Senate bill, it states, a school district shall excuse a student from attending school for a maximum of 5 days in a school year so that the student may seek or receive mental or behavioral health treatment, support, or diagnosis. It also says a student whose absence is excused under these subsections, which they list there, shall be allowed a reasonable time to make up schoolwork missed on those days. If the student satisfactorily completes the schoolwork, the day of the absence shall be counted as a day of compulsory attendance. So, in other words, if the student is absent for a mental or behavioral health reason that is supported by documentation, like a doctor's note, and the kid is marked absent for that reason, the absence is excused. If they complete the work that they missed on that day, it doesn't specify, you know, the timeline. I guess that would be up to the school or the district policy. If the student completes the work, then it reverts the absence entirely and is counted as a day of attendance. So mental and behavioral health matters seem to be on the rise, or at the very least, we're talking about it a lot more, especially after, you know, living through a global pandemic and seeing the unignorable impact it has had on students and their learning and their attendance. So what do y'all think about something like this? Is this, in terms of establishing policy, reasonable? Do you feel like it's responsive, appropriate? What are your thoughts, Lance?
Well, it's definitely responsive, right? That's no doubt. This is responding to some of those factors that you just named, and a lot of other things happening in our world that you didn't name. Whether it's reasonable and appropriate, I guess, is in the eye of the beholder. And whether this bill is going to go anywhere is also a question mark, although maybe that's out of scope for a conversation. I would say that for the three of us who have worked in schools, we might already see some of these things in this bill that are going to maybe be codified into Texas law already happening in practice. I know at my school in particular, we're amenable to absences of this nature. And of course, the teachers who are worth their salt will always work with the student once they return to the campus. What is probably a little bit new in this bill as far as what it would create as formal policy is that compulsory attendance piece. Right. We don't necessarily retroactively change absences, even excused absences related to mental health as kids were compulsorily attended. Is that even a word? Can you all help me with the cognate there?
Compulsively anyway, attending.
There you go. You were an expert in your Latin class in high school, apparently. But anyways,
I was an English major.
That piece of the bill is new, and I think maybe reasonable and appropriate to answer your question, because it's not. We can't ignore the fact that attendance is a driver of funding in this state. And as funding is going to be one of the biggest catch-all umbrella concepts in this legislative session, having these avenues for schools to increase their attendance numbers, even when they are responding to the needs of the student, could be a good thing. Matthew, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with everything that you said there. I don't find any of the language in this bill, or at least from that excerpt, to be all that controversial. But at the same time, I also don't think that this is a very creative bill. I don't really know what, I mean, I guess the intention of this bill is to sort of like, you know, indirectly promote this idea of seeking professional behavioral or mental support, right? Which seems to be, you know, going on right now in a lot of ways in our culture and our country. But at the same time, allowing kids 5 days to sort of like miss school and seek behavioral treatment, what overall impact is that going to have, and how is that going to be held accountable in any way or measured in any way, is probably very, very minimal, if existent at all. And I think that, like, you know, with something like this, it's like kids spend a lot more time in school than they do at a therapist's office. And so I think a much more interesting or creative way to approach this problem with mental health is to allocate funding and resources and attention and time to developing programs or training for educators and for counselors, and to put the funding toward schools in this regard, or the attention at least toward schools in this regard. I mean, this bill is, yeah, I don't disagree with it, but I don't see how it's going to be all that effective.
That's an interesting take.
In mitigating our mental health crisis right now in the United States. Maybe crisis is a strong word, but.
Yeah, but I can appreciate where you're coming from, because I like that you are thinking from, you know, through the lens of not just are we working with them on, you know, the need to seek care, but if we bring resources into the school that are able to provide that care, then we're doing it kind of in-house and thereby keeping the kids engaged in the learning space. That's kind of what I took from what you were suggesting, yeah. Matthew. And that's, yeah, that to me is a creative approach. But my thought initially went directly where Lance's did, which is that, well, this is definitely tied to funding, because if it helps with attendance on record, yeah, then it helps with, you know, what our districts are receiving in terms of funding from the state.
Yeah. And I'll just add to that, to reframe this in terms of funding may be seen as cynical, right? But the rosier way to frame it, while still getting at the backdoor part of this bill, is the idea that it's not necessarily that we're addressing the treatments for mental illness that many students need, but that we're helping schools with a program for forgiveness of those absences, which is really helpful.
If that's the intention of the bill, then yeah, it works. I mean, if it's about money and it's about funding and attendance and stuff like that, then sure.
What else you got for us, Natalie?
All right. So the next one we have is House Bill 1425. This has been introduced, and here's an excerpt. The Board of Trustees of a school district or the governing body of an open enrollment charter school that is not operated by or affiliated with a religious organization, so a public school or a charter school that is not a private religious institution, may by record vote on a resolution described by subsection A1 to adopt a policy requiring every campus of the district or school to provide students and employees with an opportunity to participate in a period of prayer and reading of the Bible or other religious text on each school day. So here are some additional provisions on this one. Assigned consent or release of an employee or a parent or guardian is required of anybody who wants to participate. Uh-huh. So these dedicated or devoted time and space for prayer or reading of Bible or religious text cannot happen in the presence of anyone who did not sign that consent or release. Nothing can take place over a PA system. So they can't do this over the announcements of the intercom at school. It cannot interfere with or substitute instructional time. So it's not being done during the school day per se. Or if it is being done during the school day, it's not interrupting anybody's instructional time.
Right.
So how do y'all imagine the implementation of something like this would impact the culture or the climate of your campuses? When or how would this even be done?
This is a much more controversial bill than the last one, I think. So we have in terms of religion at our on our campus, a pretty diverse student body. The majority of my guests would be Christian, or but what would this look like? I have no idea. I think that it's opening a dangerous door, though, to students being targeted, students sort of like, finding ways to form groups based around this, possibly feelings of being ostracized or left out. I don't know how many students would take part in this, though, either. My guess is that not many. But I don't. I mean, at the same time, I mean, it's a public institution, and we want to encourage sort of like, your freedom of religion and your ability to sort of like, participate in prayer, I guess. But like, why is this happening now, right? I think it's a more interesting question. And as is this happening because in Texas, we are probably going to move toward a voucher system where private schools are going to become a bigger thing, and a lot of those private schools are religious based. I don't know. I mean, why do you guys think that this is a topic at all, I guess?
Yeah, and also I just want to take the second to point out that we're illustrating right here what happens if something like this does advance and become statute and mandated. It comes down to then the districts and the campuses to have these conversations about how are we going to do this? What is
Right.
this
How
going
are
to
we?
look like? So, Lance, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's an interesting one too, and it actually kind of dovetails with the previous bill because I'm hard pressed to think that even public schools like we work in wouldn't already provide space for students wanting to exercise their religious rights now, right to prayer, that is. When Natalie, you read all of those provisions about the ways that this could not be done, those are the ways that we're already not doing it. And so, like, students that want to come forward and have time for prayer at my school, I would find a way for them to do that already, right? I don't need House Bill 1425 to give me a protocol for that. So, but not everyone's like me, right? And not everyone's like my district, for example. And so this maybe could be read in its implementation more as a sanction for more blending or blurring of that separation of church and state that we've seen. It also kind of combines with our previous conversation around Bible curriculum being included in high quality instructional materials in the state, which was, since we talked about it, approved by the State Board of Education on an 8-7 vote. And so, Matthew, when you brought up those feelings of exclusion or ostracization, I'm really struggling with my nouns today. That would be an area of concern that I would have. The three words in this bill or other religious text, I just realized that was four words after I read it, is carrying a lot of weight. Why is the Bible being name dropped by name, but or other religious text is a catch-all? What does that imply with our language is the other in our schools and in our classrooms and in our state, frankly? It's just a question. I'm not saying what I think, but it's just a question. What about
No,
you?
it's totally fair. And to your point, these are things that are already happening. At least I'm aware of them happening even on my campus. I know that do y'all have a Fellowship of Christian Athletes organization on your campuses?
There are many formal Christian organizations in Dallas ISD, for sure.
Right. Now, I don't know that there are many groups specifically named at, you know, the high school level where you are, Lance. I know in middle school, there's not like a fellowship of Jewish athletes or a fellowship of Muslim athletes or anything like that. But I don't know. Maybe those other organizations already do exist. They do not meet during instructional time, but there is, you know, a space hosted for them for that activity. And, you know, I know that we hold space for some of our Muslim students who pray throughout the day that have a private room that they can go in and still do that. So I don't know. We'll see if this is one that makes it through as, you know, something valuable on return.
Don't you see this as just another way that public education is becoming further politicized?
Yeah.
I mean, that's my concern, is that, like, once again, it seems like the state is trying to make public education controversial, or it doesn't. I don't know if this kind of bill is necessary. Like you said, Lance and Natalie, and the same thing at my school is like, yeah, I mean, everyone is free to sort of practice their religion on our campus. And if you want to go and spend 10 minutes during lunch and, you know, pray or you know, read some kind of religious text, you're more than welcome to. I don't know a teacher on my campus who wouldn't sort of like try to find avenues for you to be able to sort of, you know, connect with your religion. But now that this is sort of like becoming a legislative issue, it's just sort of like drawing more attention to these controversial topics. And I find that to be problematic.
That's a fair point.
I agree. I have one more for you. Senate Bill 218. Here's the excerpt. In addition to the number of trustees of a school district as provided by Section 11.051, the Board of Trustees of each school district shall appoint a student trustee in the manner provided by this section. And I'll summarize the parameters around this because this text is pretty lengthy. Basically, each district can appoint one student trustee at a time for a one-year term. So this is a high school student. They must be and remain enrolled in an academic good standing with a GPA of 2.5 on a 4-point scale. There is an application process that's conducted by the board. If the role is vacated at some point during the school year, the board president can appoint a replacement. Presumably would come from those other applications that were submitted in whenever this is done initially. The student ambassador can attend and participate in meetings, but cannot vote or make or second any motions. The student trustee is not compensated, but can be reimbursed for expenses to participate. So I guess maybe their gas. And they may earn up to one academic course credit in a subject area determined appropriate by the district. So so the student trustee is present. They're given a seat at the table, so to speak. They don't have any real voting power, but they have no power. They have voice, maybe, right? They can bring some perspective.
And ears.
And ears, that's true. So what do y'all think about engaging students in this kind of like school board activity? How could it be of benefit? What are the good things? Or how could it maybe be of concern? Lance, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to maybe surprise both of you and our listeners here and say Senate Bill 218, unambiguously good. That's my stance on this. I'll keep my comments short. Involving more students, or a student in this case, it does say the number one in the text. A student in these civic processes of, you know, the allocation of power in a school board and a school district is unambiguously good. Even the part of them getting a credit as determined appropriate by the district, I think that's great. My only two questions would be, number one, why not also a teacher? Because teachers should be in the room as well. Speaking from bias, of course. And then also just the number of the bill cannot be ignored, 218. For our listeners that don't know, the numbering of the bills often can indicate the priority. So I don't know if this one will go anywhere, but again, I would say unambiguously good. Either of y'all want to dispute me on that?
No, I think that this is great. My only issue besides teachers not being included in this is a student seems pretty small. It'd be cool if there were
true.
Like, I feel like if there were like five students who were able to sort of like represent their district and you know bring their concerns, that would be interesting.
That'd be fun. Well, yeah, that'd be
I
fun.
Almost feel like in a larger district like mine, and like Lance's, I mean, in all districts, it seems like I wonder how effective it would be just to have one student representing. It almost seems like it would be appropriate to have one from each high school
Right,
that can
right.
speak to that feeder group of schools experience and things like that, and kind of be an ambassador in that way.
So we're
But
saying
anyway,
good, but more.
yeah. Well, I just to tack that thought on as Matthew presented it, like one does seem small. But anyway, what else did you think?
I think that this is just a great way to get student voice out there and to get the perspective of the student, which I think is hugely important. Would love to see the perspective of a teacher in that room, even if they don't get a vote necessarily. I think that would be really important too. But yeah, I think that this is a step in the right direction, and I have no qualms about SB 218.
I wonder what kind of course credit it would be allocated to. Like it says a subject that the district deems appropriate that they would earn credit for. So some kind of like civics course or I don't know. Be curious.
It is not allowed for teachers to run for school board. I think the language
Right.
from the state is that those positions are incompatible with one another. So if I did suggest flippantly that I think a teacher should be in a school board meeting, maybe that it's worth considering why teachers are not in the school board in the first place legally. So.
Good point. Well, these were just a few of the many bills introduced for this 89th legislative session, which is about to kick off in a matter of days. I hope that this episode, if nothing else, creates some awareness for our listeners about the wide array of ideas floating around about how we can make education in Texas better. You know, some of these things would go right under the radar if we're relying strictly on our local and state news resources that kind of, you know, they typically tend toward the same headlines of the major topics, such as vouchers and funding and all of those things. But there are also these smaller matters that are sometimes sneaking by without getting a whole lot of attention. And it's important that we pay attention to all of it. I want to remind all of our listeners that you too have input, even if you're not in education, even if you're not in a classroom. Your vote and your voice are really more powerful than you realize. Along with the text of each of the proposed bills that we discussed today, we've also linked the Texas Legislature's main webpage, which is a great resource to tap into to read bill text, to track the progress of legislation, watch videos. You can even check out calendars of scheduled hearings. Perhaps you'd even like to attend one of those hearings in person and offer your own testimony. One thing we know for sure is that Texas schools and students deserve the very best, and we will continue here to advocate for policy that affords it to them. Matt, Lance, listeners, thanks for being here, and we'll chat again soon.
Thank you.
Bye, y'all. Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
If you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.